All right, so trying to figure out college football, we're going to have a matchup of the Big Ten and the Big 12 this weekend. Rutgers and Michigan are both 3-0. Oklahoma State and Kansas State are both 3-0. They all have wins that you go, Now, Rutgers hasn't played anybody. Michigan's got a win over Washington. Oklahoma State just won at Boise State. Kansas State beat Stanford. So just a weird year trying to figure out where everybody fits in the world of college football. That's why we turn to Parker Gabriel. He's got all the answers. What do you know for sure after the first 3 weeks of college football? Who do you think is really, really good?
That's a good question. I don't know. I don't know what I know after 3 weeks of college football. I think in the Big Ten, and in particular in the Big Ten West to start, Iowa and Wisconsin are really good on defense. Iowa's probably just really good overall. I mean, are they the fifth best team in the country? I don't know, but then it's like you could say the same thing about Oklahoma and all the, and so like, I mean, someone's gotta be. So, but then they both, I don't know about struggle on offense. Wisconsin has struggled on offense and they've only played twice. You know, I think one thing I know is that the East looks like a more interesting race than it has the past couple of years. I think if you're James Franklin's team at Penn State or Jim Harbaugh's team at Michigan, you know, I don't know if either of those teams ultimately will be able to get over the hump, but they both got to feel like they have a chance right now. With Ohio State, I mean, Ohio State's really talented, but maybe not head and shoulders above everybody like they've been. Defense, they've had some issues. And so I think both sides of the Big Ten right now are wide open in their own respect, and that should make for a really interesting and probably kind of weird couple of months here coming up.
Doesn't it seem that maybe they're – and we're the jury's still out on Rutgers and Maryland, and maybe Indiana is the weak team in the East Division at the end of the year – but right now, it doesn't look like there's a weak team in the East Division, which normally there's two or three of those teams.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I mean, I if you want to take a very unscientific approach to it, I do power rankings in the Big Ten each week. And I think this week I had 11 through 14, the bottom four teams in the conference all being from the West. So that, I mean, I think that tells you, you know, something about just the kind of tough start that a couple of schools, you know, Nebraska loses to Illinois, and then Illinois looks bad from there. Northwestern got pounded by Michigan State the first week, then lost to Duke, which is probably going to look like a really bad loss by the time the end of the year rolls around. So it's just been tougher sledding on the West side. But, yeah, I totally agree with you. I mean, the East is deep. There's not a gimme in that. You know, if the easiest game you're going to play on your side is against Rutgers or against Elliott Tagovailoa and those receivers at Maryland, you know, that's now we'll see. I mean, we'll see when Big Ten play rolls around. There might be a, 58-10 or something in there somewhere along the way. But those teams both look at this point like they're at least improved from last year.
You know the old Bill Parcells quote, "You are what your record says you are." If you apply that to Nebraska, do you agree?
Pretty much. Yeah, pretty much. Because the ingredients have been there for two more wins than they have, honestly. You know, I think you can, if you want to play the ifs and buts game, they're a lot closer to being 4-0 than they are to being 0-4.
Yes.
But it's the same old stuff for the most part that's tripped them up. I mean, they've taken better care of the ball overall. The one against Illinois, the fumble right before halftime was a killer. But when you talk about special teams miscues and penalties and, you know, sort of shooting yourself in the foot, that stuff all matters in games, and that costs you games, and it's cost Nebraska, I would say, twice so far. So, yeah, I mean, I think, I understand why they feel good about themselves, and there's, you know, Frost said after the Oklahoma game, and I thought he was about right. He said, there's a lot to clean up and also a lot to build off of. But until the cleanup stuff really is nice and tidy, they're a team that everyone's going to look at that they play and say, man, this team could come get us. And, you know, they're somewhere in that 500 neighborhood until they can put the self-inflicted stuff behind them.
Anybody would like to have number 83 on the field. And Nebraska finally got him back in Travis Vokolek. I imagine that the quarterback had a big smile on his face leading up to that game, knowing that this was going to be the game that Vokolek was going to play. But in particular, Parker, what benefit is it for Adrian Martinez to have Travis Vokolek out on the field along with Austin Allen? What does that do for Adrian, and what does that do for the offense eventually?
Yeah, I mean, it just gives you another guy who's 6'6 and 260 to you know, to catch, run around and catch the ball. But I think I think probably the bigger thing is in the run game, you know, and then you can talk about the personnel benefits of it too. You know, like Chris Hickman and Chancellor Brewington, they did a really nice job, I think, of filling in overall. But when you've got 11 and 83 on the field together, a defense has to sort of commit to how they're going to play against that, you know? And so are you going to play base and have one of those guys, you know, a linebacker account for one of those guys because you're worried about the run? If you go wide and play nickel against two tight ends, that benefits Nebraska in the run game, and Nebraska can use any advantage that they can get in terms of trying to run the ball efficiently. And so it's another big physical veteran guy, and it's a security blanket. I mean, we talk about that with tight ends a lot. It's probably kind of cliche, but, you know, it's like, I think you probably just, if you're Adrian Martinez, yeah, I'm not warm and fuzzies during the game maybe, but thinking about having both those guys on the field and then seeing it in practice, those are a couple of big horses to have out there. They give you, you know, personnel flexibility, formation flexibility, that they help you in terms of blocking the run game. And then as we saw, they're both capable of making big plays down the field too in the past.
Can they fix the left guard spot?
Travis Vokolek might be a pretty good left guard, but I think he's a pretty good tight end, so they'll probably keep using him there. But yeah, I mean, so far it's been, you know, it was Piper, and then they tried Hickson, and then Hickson got a little banged up against Oklahoma. You know, I think there's a chance they were going to try Brock Bando, or maybe they still will, but then he got sick, and so he's been out for a couple weeks. And so, you know, there's been that, hey, you've got two guys that have played there. You know, maybe Bando gets a shot. Maybe a guy like Nori Nwuelle gets a shot. The more radical, you know, search for a fix there would be moving somebody in from tackle to guard and then, you know, sticking a true freshman in Teddy Prochazka in the starting lineup. They haven't gone that route yet, you know, shuffle the deck where it's, hey, instead of just trying to plug somebody else in at left guard, we're going to move some pieces around to get Prochazka on the field. I'm really curious, and I don't know about this week or next week or after the bye or whatever, but I'm really curious if it comes to that point at some point this season, because his stock, and again, I mean, it's one thing to have your stock rise really fast in the program. It's another to be able to go out and do it against Big Ten teams as a true freshman. But I think they're very intrigued by what they've seen from him, and it'll just be curious to see if they decide, okay, he's got to be on the field to try to help Nebraska solve that issue.
Can the rest of that offensive line, I mean, I know that Greg Austin is probably preaching patience, and he's not real happy, and he's a little nervous, but is this something, like, what do you expect on Saturday night for this offensive line after what you saw the previous Saturday? And then you throw in Oklahoma had a plethora of good down linemen and linebackers that are going to be playing on Sunday. And now Nebraska is going to see another really good edge rusher where you're looking at Corcoran and Benhart and Drew Beasley. Parker, what do you think will look different on that offensive line on Saturday night a week later?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, Nebraska really had to sort of add guys to its, you know, protection and stuff and obvious passing downs against Oklahoma. It's still, you know, they had some success, but not enough. And I think Adrian Martinez was pressured about half the time he dropped back. And that's just, you know, too often. So in terms of pass protection, it's all up and down the lineup. I mean, it's easier to see when you're just watching a game on TV, a tackle getting beat around the edge. And that definitely happened. Don't get me wrong. It happened a bunch of times against Oklahoma. But interior pressure, you know, that was an issue too. So they've really got to clean it up. They've got to communicate. That's the thing. I mean, you're talking about it's going to be loud on Saturday night. And teams that have watched Nebraska, I mean, the last two games they've played, Buffalo and Oklahoma, haven't hardly blitzed at all. You know, haven't brought more than four hardly at all. Teams have banked on the fact that they can cross up Nebraska by using movement up front, you know, bringing a guy, the fourth guy from maybe somewhere that they disguise, twisting and stunting and all that stuff. And that has been enough to put Adrian Martinez under some fire the last couple weeks. So, you know, the offensive line, they got to clean it up on the communication front, and then obviously, you know, technique-wise too, to keep the quick pressure from getting toward the quarterback.
Pros or cons, and what are the pros and cons of, if you're Nebraska and you flip on the film of last week, Michigan State had a scheme against a guy like De'Eriq King. You have a guy that maybe not as good a passer, but is very similar in Adrian Martinez. What are the pros and cons for Nebraska going against Michigan State?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting question. I mean, what De'Eriq King threw it like 59 times, right?
Yep.
So obviously Nebraska's hoping not to have to get into that situation. But the thing with Nebraska and the way Adrian Martinez is playing right now is you've got to make a decision with him about how much are you going to try to attack him in the pocket and how much you have to sit back. I mean, Oklahoma didn't blitz and they took one of their best players in Benito and they tried to mix it up quite a bit where he was rushing and then he was spying, and you know, you've got to put resources toward trying to keep Martinez in the pocket. And so, you know, that frees you up in other areas. That puts your receivers in better position. And that's an area. Yeah. I think if you're going to look for an area where Nebraska can attack, I think they can attack Michigan State down the field a little bit in the passing game. Now, that's obviously easier to do if you can get the running game going a little bit. And it's easier to do if you can, you know, really use play action and influence linebackers and they have the linebackers have something to worry about in the run game. But that's, you know, that they've been, I don't know about suspects, but you can get to Michigan State down the field a little bit. And I have a feeling that Nebraska is going to try to do that quite a bit.
Parker Gabriel from Lincoln Journal Star joining us. Let's go over the other side of the ball. This is a Michigan State team that's not going to play a ton of tempo. I think the most plays they've run this year is 72. And they're what Michigan State, which we've grown up thinking that's what they're supposed to be like. They're good in the trenches. They have a downhill scheme. I think they're a little bit more dynamic on offense. People are, you know, they focus on the number one rusher in the country, but they have some other nice little weapons. But we know that they're going to line the football up and try and run it and challenge Nebraska's defensive line. I think the general sense, Parker, and correct me if I'm wrong, is the defensive line has played well. And then you watch a little bit closer, maybe you get inside of the numbers, and it hasn't been a lockdown group against the run. And at moments, they've struggled against the run. They haven't given up the big chunk play, but Eric Gray went for 5.6 yards per carry. How would you assess through the first four games their performance on the defensive line against the run and what it'll take on Saturday night?
Yeah, they're going to need their best outing of the season, I think, for sure, against Michigan State. They've been good, but not great, probably, against the run. But like you say, I mean, there haven't been many. I think Kevin Marks from Buffalo got him for the one big run for, you know, 40 or so, and that didn't hurt them. They got off the field after that. And other than that, you're right. I mean, they've done a nice job of preventing the really big play, and that'll be critical against Kenneth Walker, because he's shown this year the ability to hit the home run. I think the biggest challenge is Nebraska's numbers aren't great just on a yards per carry average, and they're not great on third down. That, you know, against the three FBS teams they've played, opponents are converting 50% of the third downs between Illinois, Buffalo, and Oklahoma. And part of that's because you know, opponents have been in third and short, third and manageable mm-hmm. quite a bit. And so one of the challenges with Walker is like, yeah, and that run game is, sure, you're gonna give up a little bit here and there. I mean, you don't need to hold them to 28 carries for 54 yards or something like that. You'd love to, obviously, but that's not the requirement. The requirement is that you get yourself into third and medium or third and long often enough that you can get off the field. And that's going to take, you know, making some plays behind the line of scrimmage. And that's, you know, when you look at, yeah, Oklahoma ran the ball okay, like numbers-wise last weekend, but there was a drive, I don't remember exactly when it was in the game, there was a drive where Oklahoma really committed to the run, and they had a lot, they had quite a bit of success with it. It wasn't the 4-minute drive at the end of the game, but earlier, and it was 6 yards, 8 yards, 3 yards, 12, and then on a second down and 6 or something like that, there's one negative foot. You know, you get a -3 or a -4 in there somewhere, and that can really change the complexion of the drive. So I think the key for Nebraska's defense is, yeah, you got to contain Kenneth Walker in that run game, but every once in a while, you got to make the play in the backfield that sort of stunts the growth of a drive, and that can be enough to get off the field, you know, often enough to be in position to win the game.
Nebraska defensively has got to get off the field. They haven't been good. I think they're 92nd in the country. But staying on the field, you brought up home run hitter, and I look at the Big Ten, and the Big Ten is a good running back conference this year. There's some older guys, there's some younger guys, and you lost one of the best running backs at Minnesota, but it looks like his backup was feeling himself out in Boulder last Saturday. So you got the number one rusher in the country. You got to have depth as I look across the conference in the amount of teams that really commit to running the football. Nebraska on a home run hitter, Parker, you know it's been a roulette wheel. Did Nebraska find something in Ramir Johnson? It just wasn't along the lines of the game plan against Oklahoma best suited him. But do you think that we found Ramir Johnson as what he's supposed to be or what we thought he would be at Nebraska, and that wasn't just a one-off, that could be week to week if he's involved in the game plan?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, and you know, we'll see if he can capitalize on it. It's funny because this is about the time of year that Nebraska sort of found its guy at running back so far on the Scott Frost. You know, it took a little bit before Divine Azigbo emerged. It took a little bit in 19 before Dedrick Mills really got going, and then he got hurt last year. So they haven't identified their guy, or they haven't been able to get to their guy regularly, one or the other, in any of the first 3 years with his coaching staff. So maybe it's another case of that, where that, you know, you go through a couple of options and then a guy a few weeks into the year emerges. I thought, you know, for Ramir Johnson, the thing that you just wonder about naturally is the ability to hold up over the course of the season, because he's not as big as the other running backs in that room. You know, Gabe Urban, who obviously now is out for the year, Savion Morrison and Marquis Stepp are all 6 foot plus and 200 pounds plus, and Ramirez listed at, you know, 5'10 and 180 or something like that, 185. So that's the challenge for him. Every time I thought they found a guy to roll with so far this year, it's been somebody else the next week. So I'm not going to jump the gun on saying, yeah, Ramir Johnson looks like the guy going forward, but you can tell the feel he has for running between the tackles. And then you saw a little bit, well, you know, several times against Oklahoma, the burst when he finds a little bit of daylight too. So it's been a long time coming for him to get a chance. I thought he, you know, capitalized pretty well on that chance against the Sooners. And now it's up to him to, you know, to take it and run with it and try to establish himself as the lead dog.
Have you and Sip figured out who's going to wear green, who's going to wear white, so you blend in with the stripe out?
We haven't. We haven't had that conversation yet. But I do, last time, I haven't been to East Lansing in 11 years, 10, mm-hmm. 10 years. But the last time I was there, Kirk Cousins threw a Hail Mary to win the game to Keith Mickel. And by the time I got out of the press box, I walked out at like 1 a.m. and the only person out there was a guy running down the street in a cape and a thong yelling, "Go green, go white," at himself. So that's the enduring memory I have so far of East Lansing.
As always, I appreciate it, Parker. Safe travels up to East Lansing. Look forward to the coverage all week long and all weekend long.
Have a good week.
It's Parker Gabriel, Lincoln Journal Star. I like the campus. It feels, the first time I was there, it felt like a Big Ten campus. I don't see it as a raucous atmosphere. Maybe it changes your 3-0. You're feeling yourself. It's at night. You got a stripe out. You got your coach saying, we're in the woodshed. But it's not a bad place to watch a football game. But the campus feels like the Big Ten. It feels like a Big Ten campus. And they'll have 75,000 people there on Saturday night. All right. Thanks, everybody, that joined us again in the mailbag. We pushed that back to tomorrow, so we'll get to those questions that you all submitted. Thanks to Mike DeVille sitting in for a chance. He'll be back tomorrow. USC's coming up next. I'm Gary Sharp. Tomorrow, we're back at 10 a.m. with another edition of the Gary Sharp Show on 1620 The Zone.